feeling that I know is real, real, real. It's in the way you look, it's in the way you love, and I can see that this is real, is real. It's in the way you talk, it's in the way you touch, and I can see.
Hiya, I'm Kerry Lee and welcome to Women in Funny Business. And this month I'm joined by comedian and all-round fabulous woman, Lara A. King. Enjoy.
Welcome, Lara. Lara A. King or Lara King?
Lara A. King.
Okay, can I ask what
although the way that you said it then, it sounded like Lara A. King.
Oh, it did, didn't
like
it?
Like it's a whole
as
word.
In your, you know, aching, you're hurting.
Yeah, or aching for something. Yeah.
So what does the A stand
no,
for?
No, you see, now, straight in with the question, I'm not
sorry.
Going to answer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to guess. No, I won't. Okay. But it's an initial.
there's been radio shows before when people have had to call in.
To guess
to
what it
suggest what it might
right.
be. Yeah, okay. mostly say arsehole.
How rude.
Yeah. But okay. it's there is another Lara King, you see, who's a presenter on Radio Humberside, I think, or she used to be.
Which I was unaware of.
Yeah. So when people think you're just doing that because you're an arse, there is actually a reason behind it.
I get it.
Yeah. But also, I am being an arse. Because I just kind of like the way it looks. You know, sort of symmetrical with this A in the middle.
I like how it looks. I get exactly what you mean. I do find your name very satisfying.
Yeah, it's all slightly OCD, symmetrical.
No, I like
the
that.
The A is symmetrical. Yeah. But when you get called onto stage as Lara A. King, and people go, A. King for what?
Yeah, never bloomin' occurred to me, and I've heard your name mentioned so many times as well.
No,
why have I never
thought
that?
You're going to think it every single time you hear it now.
Well, I'm just disappointed in the fact that I'm meant to be working in comedy, and that joke that's apparently blatant has never stared me in the face.
Or Lara A. King, what not A. Queen. There is also that, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got asked by somebody who was fixing my guitar the other day,
yeah.
And he had to fill out a form. And you know when you get the drop-down menu to
yes.
say,
yes, yes.
Are you a miss, are you a Ms, are you a mister, are you a, you know. And one of them was King. He said you can be a dame or
get
you can be a
out.
King. And I said, well, I want to be a king. And he went, of course you do. Okay, I'll put you in as a king. And what's your first name? And I said, Lara. And he said, well, what's your surname? And I said, King.
King Lara King.
I'm King Lara King. Only to the guy that fixed because of my guitar. Not to anyone else.
But if you put King on a drop down, of course you're not going to be Ms, are you? You're going to be King.
Absolutely. Sometimes when I book into hotels, I'm a doctor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then I always think, oh, no, but what if someone gets ill in the night and they come and wake me up to fix them, to treat them?
Oh, that's brilliant.
Don't put it on your aeroplane ticket because
no,
yeah,
that would be asking for trouble.
You'd have to then go through the motions of trying to resuscitate somebody, wouldn't you?
And how does one go through the motions?
And performing CPR with absolutely no medical knowledge whatsoever.
Brilliant.
I don't know, maybe a Heimlich or something, yeah, you'd do, yeah. And I don't know.
Just a very concentrated face,
yeah.
Whilst listening to the air horn.
Two fingers on the neck there, trying to look for the pulse. I think that's definitely, I've seen that in CSI.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's going to stay with me forever. Okay, so I'm going to ask possibly a question you have been asked before, but how did you get into comedy? Was it accidental or on purpose?
It was on purpose eventually.
Okay.
But it was kind of accidental the way that it actually happened.
Because you performed under another guise initially?
I've performed as a singer-songwriter all the way through the 80s and 90s. Some of you might never have heard of me. some of you might never have heard my hits. I was quite serious about being an angst-ridden singer-songwriter, although I wasn't angst-ridden, actually. That's not true. I was quite jolly.
Yeah.
sort of quite sunshiny, actually. Most of
how
my songs.
Very non-80s.
Yeah,
really,
it was. I think that's...
Yeah.
Maybe if I'd have been a bit more miserable. You know, I used to see people coming up and singing about misery and just want their life. But I was quite happily in love and writing love songs and nice sunny things. But yes, yeah, so I was working, performing, appearing,
yes,
struggling as a singer-songwriter.
In England, downtown.
In London, yep, mostly. Yep. A bit of Brighton, but mostly London. Yep. And of course, there was a great movement of singer-songwriters in, well, there still is, but the Mean Fiddler was still quite kind of like, there was a lot of sort of grungy little clubs. And of course, you could still smoke in those days.
Oh, gosh, it's a different time, yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah, yeah.
Sort of, I mean, not that I'm saying smoking is good, but it was that whole sort of downstairs, underneath somewhere, smoky music venue that, like I say, there was the Borderline, the Mean Fiddler, there was Pause While I Think of the Others. What are the other music venues in London that I would play in the 90s? Cut that bit out because it makes me look like I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yes, and can I just add that Lara is, of course, 21. It's just that she's lived a very full life.
Yeah, I started very, very young.
Yeah.
I won a talent contest when I was 8 and that was it. Just next thing I know, I'm in the Mean Fiddler. No, I did. I did a lot of acoustic music venues, which now all escape my mind. Oh, this is awful, isn't it?
It doesn't matter. It's just mind blankness. Your background anyway.
Yeah.
You were,
but that is how it sort of happened, was that I was working as a stage manager as well. And I think, if I'm honest, I was just always a bit too shy and a bit too... Yeah, I know.
Just for listeners, I did react because... Of course, I mean, I don't know you very, very well, but I've worked with you several times and shy has never come into my mind on that journey, I have to say.
I think I just hit a certain age and just went, no, I mean, too, okay, not shy, cowardly.
Oh, that's harsh. You mean a confidence thing, you mean?
I think it was more of a confidence thing. And I suppose when you're singing and writing songs, although it's quite personal and you're quite vulnerable, you're sort of hiding behind,
yes,
you've got the guitar,
what you mean,
and you've got,
yes,
the song, yeah. And comedy is, as you yourself know, and manage to hide very well. It's quite a frightening thing to do.
You are putting literally your, unless you're doing a character, I suppose, you are putting yourself,
that's one step away, isn't it?
Yeah. Out there.
Yes, I mean, I've got friends who are actors who still say, yeah, I'm fine with the script, I'm fine with the character. But to get up and be yourself and to say things that you think are funny, that you're expecting other people to find funny,
yes,
and you're on your own. So I think for a long time I wanted to do it, but there was this sort of underlying fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just denied it myself,
yeah,
for a very long time. And then I got an amazing opportunity with Fascinating Aida, who are a cabaret trio.
Great name.
Possibly the best cabaret trio ever.
Oh, wow.
Who I was working for as a stage manager.
Oh.
There you are, you see. Wants to be on stage, but chooses to sit in a dark corner,
mm-hmm,
while other people go on stage.
Yeah.
So this isn't a psychology session, is it, as well as...
it could very well
phone
be.
Phone in if you've got any... any ideas of how to fix that?
If it helps you, Lara.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did. I spent many years as a stage manager and stage managed comedians as well as cabaret.
So did you feel quite wistful watching, or you were enjoying
totally.
Your... Oh, okay.
And sometimes if they said something that wasn't as good as they'd said it the night before, I'd sit there and thinking, if I'd have been out there.
Yeah.
And if I'd have been out there, I'd have been on stage on time and not made the audience wait 5 minutes, and I would have been at the venue on time, and I wouldn't be complaining that the water was Evian and not Volvic. I would have just been the absolute best of it. Again, cut that bit out. I'd have been the absolute best of it.
That is really cool, because I've got words as well. But how wonderful that you've made that transition, because, you know, there's nothing worse when you meet someone who talks about what they could have been. Or does just sit on the sideline and goes, well, I could have done that better, but doesn't actually go and do that better.
Yeah.
Whereas you've actually come out the other side and gone, no, actually, I can do this.
Yeah.
And you're doing it.
Yeah. Well, it was, as I say, Dilly Keen, who is Fascinating Aida with Adele Anderson and now with the lovely Liza Pullman, just asked me to come back. I'd been tour managing for them since I was in my early 20s. Again, just a few years. Very short
6 months,
career.
6 months, I think.
Yeah. I had been tour managing on and off for them, and I'd gone off and done other things. And she said, I know you probably don't want to come back and tour manage for us again, but would you tour manage a tour for us if we let you get on stage and sing a song as part of the show?
Oh.
To which I hesitated for a nanosecond and just went, yeah. And Dilly Keane was somebody who used to come and watch me do music. And she particularly liked one of my songs. And she said, I'd like you to sing It Ain't Mississippi at the beginning of Act Two. Bearing in mind that they're a cabaret act that play proper theatres.
Yes.
You know, thousand seaters. I was like, okay. Yeah, right. And what happened in the show? Can I tell the story of what happens in the show? Is that... how long is this going to be?
Yeah.
This podcast?
Oh, I should have mentioned that. About 3 days.
Oh, okay.
No.
What, you want me to talk about myself for 3 days? It's not possible.
We're not limited on time. We've got up to about 4 to 5 minutes. If it goes that long, and if you want to finish, that's fine as
well. Okay. She'll listen to it and go, well, nobody wants to hear that.
Oh, goodness. That's great.
If this story ends on the cutting room floor, then so be it.
Oh, sure, it won't. I'll just keep.
It's a great story. So, in this show, the Fascinating Aida show, which was their Silver Jubilee tour in 2010, there was a sort of a gag at the act of I'll say that again. There was a gag at the top of Act Two, which was that I couldn't find them to start the second act.
Oh,
and I'm the stage manager with the microphone that connects to the rest of the people working in the theatre. Obviously, the audience don't hear that, but at the beginning of Act Two, somehow my microphone is live to the whole audience, and I'm saying, can anybody find where they are? I don't know where. Can Fascinating Aida please come to the stage? It's time for Act Two. La la la. Then Adele comes running down and says, I can't find Dilly. I don't know where she is. And so there's this whole conversation between me and Adele backstage.
And are the audience hooked on this?
And the audience are like, well, yeah, what it's meant to, obviously, some of them would have got it straight away, but there were a lot of people who said, it's meant to sound like, oh no, the microphone shouldn't be like, we shouldn't be able to hear
brilliant.
This.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, well, I don't, where is she? And I said, I bet she's gone to the pub. I bet they've gone to the pub. And Adele says, no, I think they've gone to the, the emergency fire meeting place.
Right.
I said, well, that is the pub. So she says, I'll go to the pub and get them. You go on stage and make an announcement. So then you hear her little footsteps go scattering off. And so I'm left and you can hear me going, oh, no, oh, no. No, I can't go out there in front of all those people. Talking to myself about how nervous I am about going out there.
Fantastic.
And then I put my head around the corner and just go, oh, no, 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 I can't go there. And then I start doing a vocal warm-up and I realise I've got to go on stage and make this announcement. So I go out on stage and I say, ladies and gentlemen, there's been a technical problem. Of course, I don't know that they know that they have heard what I don't know that they've heard, but they shouldn't have heard.
Say that sentence again.
I won't. and so... I'm on stage saying, there's been a technical issue. We're trying to fix it. And then it sort of becomes apparent I'm actually quite enjoying myself being on stage. And I'm actually quite liking the fact that Fascinating Aida can't be found anywhere.
Ah, like
and I'm lapping up this attention and I'm loving it. And then I say, actually, sorry, can I have a few more lights on the stage? Can I have some more light on me? And then he turns the lights off and I start saying, you know, it's great being Fascinating Aida's company manager. One minute I'm popping to the shops for Tenor Lady. The next, I'm live on stage in front of thousands of people. And then you realise, yeah, I'm really loving it now. And I say, actually, I'm singer-songwriter in my own right and happen to have my guitar just at the side of the stage. And then people start to go, come on then, you know.
Yeah.
And again, some of the audience who spoke to me afterwards said, we didn't know whether you were going to be utter rubbish.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Had to sit really awkwardly.
Yeah, some people still didn't know at this point, was this a joke? Was this real?
Great.
Does she really have a guitar? So I go off, get my guitar, come back on and sing this beautiful ballad. And during this beautiful ballad, fascinating Aida, who were, by the way, my childhood heroes, come on from the wings and start harmonising with me in this beautiful ballad.
Oh, I've got goosebumps.
It's lovely. You go look it up on YouTube.
I will.
It ain't Mississippi.
Right.
And then, of course, Dilly goes, all right, there's that bottle of Jack Daniels you sent me out for. And ha ha ha. Hilarity perfect. And so that's how I got into...
So that was like your stepping stone towards
because people
comedy.
Said, oh, yeah, are you a stand-up comedian? And I'd say, no, I'm not. I'd love to be. And they were like, well, you should. So actually, I was kind of encouraged into it by just doing it.
Yeah.
And loving it. And going, because each night my little bit got longer and longer. At the end, it was sort of like, I was only meant to come on and sing a quick song, but then I'd written this whole 10 minutes of scripts to the song. It just kept getting longer and longer. And I kept like going, Dilly, Dilly, I've thought of something else. And she'd be like, yeah, put it in. It's great. It's all great. I mean, you know, so massive kudos
really,
to her.
Yes, because she could have gone, well, actually, rein yourself in there, love, you know. We
it's
gave you two
the,
minutes,
our show,
now
yeah.
10, calm down. Oh, how wonderful.
But she didn't, she just went, it's going brilliantly, and I love it, and it works.
Oh.
She might not have been thinking that, but that's what she said.
No, I'm sure she did.
She was.
And if it did impact on the show, they would have stopped it. You can be nice to a point, you're not that, no one's going to be that nice where it affects the show, so it must have been bloody good. Yeah.
So that's how I got into comedy. That's the long version.
Which was really interesting.
Of how
thank
I got
you.
Into actually doing comedy. And then I just started to, somebody said, and I don't know who it was, said to me, if you want to do comedy, enter some competitions.
Okay.
Just enter some competitions and see if people laugh. And see if you win any of them.
Yes. Yeah.
That's, you know.
And did you?
I did. Yeah. I won them all.
Really?
Yeah, I won all of them.
Are you serious?
No,
I'm very gullible.
I came second in one.
Right. And I suspect the person who said enter competitions was right in the sense, because then you get a proper audience, don't you?
You do. You get a proper audience and you get...
Regardless of whether you win, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Well, and you get to play in proper venues usually, because if you get to...
Rather than an open spot with three people in the audience where that's really hard to work out if you're funny or not when there's no one there.
Yeah.
Literally. So,
yeah. But also, yeah, it's kind of quite... It's kind of quite quick. If you're not any good, you're out.
Yeah.
If you are good, you stay. And the more you stay, obviously, the tougher the competition is and the better the audience are and the better the venues usually are towards the latter heats.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, it makes you really disciplined because you have to keep your time if you enter a competition, as I'm sure. Have you entered competitions?
Back in the day, yes.
when was the day?
So you think you're funny, to Edinburgh in that, and funny women, and, and Manchester City Life Comedian, yeah. And I didn't win any, but I do think they were good experiences, basically relating to what you've just said, because you got a proper audience and in a proper venue.
What year did you do Funny Women?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I've got 2004 for So You Think You're Funny in my head. So I'm assuming
was it
around
at the Leicester
similar...
Square.
I didn't come
theater.
To London. This was a Manchester Heat.
Oh, okay. Because that is in the Leicester Square Theatre, which is just beautiful.
Wow. Lovely.
Now it is in the Villa London Heat. I don't know what they were doing back then. But that's a fantastic gig.
Mm.
Really lovely. But yeah, you do. You get the big red flashing light at the back that says, you know, when you run your 5 minutes, you've got to get off. And they will.
Kick you off.
Come on and say, right, well, that was Laura aching. Mm. She's aching to get herself a watch. That's what they'll say.
I thought of asking you something before. Oh, I thought it was interesting that you said, you know, when you were a singer-songwriter in the 80s and 90s and you were joking that there was a lot of misery and that isn't your bag, you know, you were quite jolly. And do you feel the same way about comedy? Of course, comedy isn't misery, but I think there are a lot of people who and do well out of making jokes that are possibly viewed as quite cynical and a certain way of looking at the world. And my personal passion, of course, this isn't an interview about me, but I'm going to bring it back to you, is about making people feel good when they go home that night or want them to think, oh, God, feel good. I had a really good night there and quite uplifting.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen of you, I think that's what you do, whether it's that's an intention or not. I think you're very uplifting. Your energy lifts people. You are jolly when you're up there. And is, you know, does that relate to you, how you looked at things when you were a singer-songwriter? Is that what you choose? Do you choose to do it that way?
Right. Well, yeah, I think jolly is never very trendy, is it? Jolly isn't very groovy. What, jolly?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that, you know, the jolly comedian is the sort of, or the jolly singer-songwriter, it is the one that's not in the gang, isn't it? I always think that there's, you know, the sort of the angst-ridden, misery, dark, they're the ones that are in the gang.
Yeah.
And we're the ones that are sitting outside going, oh, I wish I was in the gang, but I'm just too jolly. And there's something sort of, that there's quite a lot of sort of kudos with being, you know, miserable and cynical. Mm-hmm. And I think there's absolutely a place for it. There's a place for anything.
Yes.
Because if it still makes people laugh.
I'm certainly not criticising it, yeah.
No, but I do think that, yeah, I don't have a political brain, so I don't make political jokes. I make jokes about things that I find funny.
Yeah.
And hopefully other people find them funny too. And quite a lot of my material is based on, aren't we weird? Aren't we funny? Aren't we silly? And it's not groundbreaking, sort of, you know, smash it out the park humour, but it's just sort of, aren't we weird? It's aren't funny. We funny?
Yeah.
And you can see people, and people come up, and I'm sure you've had this as well, afterwards and say, oh my God, I do that, or my husband does that,
absolutely,
or my sister does that, or, oh God, when you said that about this, and that really made me laugh, because I'd never realised I'd do it, or, and it's, that's what makes me happy, because it makes people go away, and I do a routine, this just comes to my mind, of putting petrol in the car, and having to get to 00.
Oh my God, you know? I love that. Yes, I try and do that every time. And it's winning at life if it actually happens.
It's winning at life.
Yeah.
And not, a lot of people, the amount of people that do it is staggering.
I love that you talk about this on stage. I love it.
It's like you and you see people go, oh, yeah. And when you see that, because humour is about recognising yourself. And humour is about laughing at yourself. And about recognising something really silly that you do.
Yes.
And it's beautiful, that moment when you go, oh my God, you do it too.
Yes.
You know, it's about connectivity and it's a bond and all of that lovely thing. Like, so when somebody goes home from your gig and they feel good, those are the reasons they feel good. They feel good, not just, I mean, obviously the physical endorphins and all of that that happens when you laugh, but just that kind of, oh, there's somebody else out there that does that stupid thing that I do.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realise is the friend that I came to the gig with does it too.
Well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've laughed at each other across the table. Well.
And also what then happens is you get a double whammy, because when they do it again,
they
laugh.
Yeah.
So the amount of people who said, I'm in the garage putting petrol in my car and I'm just pissing myself because I'm thinking, I do want to get it to 00.
Yeah, oh, very much so.
Because everybody's watching. Everybody cares.
Yeah.
You can't have the extra penny.
I'm sure that when I did achieve that, and I achieved it fairly recently, that I did do a little dance on the forecourt of excitement.
You did.
Winning at life.
The achievement dance.
Yeah. I have to ask you then, does it excite you when, say, if you look at your mobile phone or, I've got a watch on, most people use a clock on there. So, for example, now, if it said 3:33.
Yeah,
when it's
3:33.
Do you get very excited?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or if you think, oh, it's about 20 past 3, and you look,
and it is 20 past 3.
It is 20 past 3. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's winning.
Yeah, winning at
You're
life.
Winning.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's, you're on the right tracks. You're in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's like you're getting life right when you do things like that.
Everything is happens for a reason. Yeah, I am that sad. I am that sad.
No, it's not sad. I love that. I love that you talk about things on stage, those things that we connect over, absolutely. Oh, brilliant. Okay, what would I like to ask you now? We know how you got into comedy. Oh, I tell you what I would like to ask you about, and apologies for not doing my research correctly.
All right.
You've popped up on Facebook a few times, something to do with walking, and I want to know more about it because it looked really interesting. Is this, that's all I need to say.
I've popped up for walking.
Yeah. This is going to be way more interesting than you think, listeners.
Some people do amazing things on Facebook. I walk. I managed to put one foot in front of the other. Yeah, I did a walk, again, my Sussex accent, walk. I walked home for Christmas.
Ah.
So I walked, when you say a word loads of times and
you've
it just
made
sounds
it go
wrong.
Weird.
Yeah, I've made the word walk go weird, which is not good for this conversation. I'm going to say it a lot. I walked home from North London to my parents' house in West Sussex. It's about 80 miles.
Wow.
And I walked from, I think it was the 18th of December, and I got there on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
And to raise money for, well, the first reason I did it was to raise awareness about drink driving around Christmas. Because the statistics just rocket, and I think a lot of people take risks that wouldn't take risks any other time of the year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I just thought, maybe if I can say, look, I'm going to walk home from my house in London 80 miles to my parents, because that's where I'm spending Christmas, you
could walk
home, yeah, just from the pub.
Right.
Let's just do that this
year.
Yeah. So that was the first reason, and then I thought, well, let's see if I can raise a bit of money. Walking 80 miles for nothing. So
because you're going to need a new pair of shoes.
Because I'm going to need a new pair of shoes and I'm going to need lots of bath salts. Mm. And
it's going to cost a few quid.
Yeah. Mm. I just got back, when I decided to do this, I just got back from Lesbos. And I'd experienced the refugees landing.
My goodness.
And one thing I didn't realise, which I don't think many people realise, is once they land, they then have to get from wherever they land to the airport where they can get their papers and things sorted out at Mytilene. And that happens to be about the equivalent of 80 miles.
Oh, right. Okay.
But they're walking, when I was there, they're walking in sort of, 36 degree heat with no water. In sometimes they've lost their shoes in the sea or,
Yeah.
So, sorry to bring the whole thing down, but that's kind of the other reason why I decided I'm going to raise a bit of money, because it all ties in, you see, it's walking and it's to do with trying to get somewhere. And also I split the profits with my cousin runs a recovery centre in Hove for people who are recovering from addiction. So I gave him some money as well. And that sort of ties in with the whole drink driving thing. So it was all, that's what I did. That's what pops up on Facebook.
Wow.
Is me walking home for Christmas. It slightly pales in comparison to the fact that Joe Brand has just walked 150 miles for Sport Relief.
Oh, for goodness sake.
But, I'm only little. What was really funny is the fact that in my head, I had this idea that every time I walked through a village or something, people would come out onto the street and applaud and maybe bring me cake and Mars bars. And it didn't happen. And then I watched the Joe Brand
and
footage, and of course they're all out. She's got other famous comedians walking with her.
Did she steal the idea off you?
I think she might have done. I think she thought, you know what, if she can do it, anyone can. And that's the point.
Well, in fact it is. Yeah,
absolutely.
Jokes aside, yeah, so lots of people are going to do it. Raise awareness, raise money.
Yeah, and we, you can listen to my walk, actually, on my own very own podcast.
Yes, please do.
Which is available on Facebook if you go to Walking Home for Christmas on Facebook.
Brilliant, thank
Hashtag
you.
Choose to walk.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry about the fly.
Sorry about the blatant self-promotion.
I'd rather you did. No, that's what
I did. I did a little podcast.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting that you can hear how lonely I am in my voice. Along, nobody coming out to applaud, not even my family. When I got home for Christmas Eve, I'm walking up the street going, well, I'm nearly there, and
stop it. No. They're watching the telly or something. He's going to answer the door. I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Ding dong.
Oh, hello. Oh, it's you. You look red in the face. What have you been? I just walked.
There's nothing like family for keeping your feet firmly on the ground. Oh, with Lara's coming, she's a bit of a show off, actually. Don't give her too much attention.
But the first podcast, I'm walking to meet some friends who were waving me off, and you can hear me like this. And I'm just getting to the park now. And I've walked a quarter of a mile at this point.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's like, I think I've hit a wall. I think I might have hit a wall. Yeah, so
wow.
But
Sorry.
No, you're the one asking the questions.
I'm just interested. So how, you know, did you sort of get a momentum, and was it so many hours a day you would walk, or did you like stop at a pub every half an hour? Or...
Have a drink, yeah, and then drive a bit of the way. No, I walked on average 6 hours a day. The first day.
Away. On your own?
On my own. No welcome parties. I walked, the first day I walked about 8 hours because I was in London and I felt I could, but anywhere else, when I was on a footpath, I wanted to finish before dark and get myself
right
into my B&B safely and
ensconced. You knew where you were at.
Yeah.
Looking for things in the dark is, yeah, 10 times harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, my dad was kind enough to say, funny things happen on them footpaths after dark. I don't know why he said it in a Dorset accent. He did.
He's not from there.
No, no. But he went, funny things happen on footpaths after dark. And so there was one moment where I couldn't, I was lost and it was very muddy. And so I was walking, I was sliding around.
Oh,
so it took me like a lot longer to walk each step.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, I wasn't anywhere near anywhere that I could get a bus. Or because I always thought, oh, well, I'll just, if the worst comes to the worst, I'll just call a taxi, I'll call a local taxi number.
Yeah.
And there was one point where I was actually very, very frightened because I just thought anybody could jump out of here at any time.
Alone. Don't know where I am. Yeah.
And bring me a Mars bar.
Yeah.
Or indeed, try to steal my Nordic walking poles. Yeah. Then where would I be?
Oh, well yeah, done.
Yeah.
I read an interesting, was it an article? I think so, recently. I thought, bloody right, where I think you just made me think about it with your, you know, your dad joking or not joking about funny things happen at night, about how there is a, how do you word it, women are basically told, oh, don't be walking on your own anywhere. And it was this wonderful article of this woman who said, I've travelled all over on my own, lots of different countries, sometimes at night, and actually, on the whole, it's been fine.
Yeah.
And it's about this thing that we create of, so, you know, you mustn't, so,
yeah,
especially a woman on her own, travelling on her own, or
yeah,
walking on her own.
Yeah.
And I think it was just very interesting. It made me think, do we perpetuate that by saying, oh, you know, it, within reason, obviously don't put yourself in vulnerable situations, but I do think maybe it's something we create, a fear that we don't necessarily need to have.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I thought this is what you were going to say, actually. There was another thing that was that said, if you see a woman walking out on her own in the dark at night, don't rape her. And then it said, if you see a woman wearing a short skirt...
I saw the same thing, it's brilliant. Try not to rape her.
Try not to rape her. Yeah. And it was just sort of like, yeah, well, instead of saying to women, don't go out,
yeah,
you know, we need to be re-educating our little boys.
Women. Yeah,
yeah. Just to say to them, just don't do that.
Yeah.
It's really not good. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the same thing. It's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah, it's not our fault. It's the point. Oh, God, this is getting very dark.
So we've
it's
done rape.
Yeah.
We've done misery.
Oh, God.
Suicide? Should we do suicide?
Let's do this.
Well, see, this is the thing, is it's, you know, that's what we do as comedians. We make sad stuff and difficult
the
stuff
dark light
funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I'm most complimented on after a gig is my material on Alzheimer's. Yeah, people come up and say thank you, because my nan's got Alzheimer's, or my mum's got Alzheimer's, or my dad, and we don't talk about it in our family.
Fantastic.
And you've just made me go, oh, thank goodness. There's, you know, not that Alzheimer's is funny, but if
but
you
can someone
laugh,
else is going through this, or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. After Elfest, which you and I have performed at lots, and I guess we are plugging Elfest there, but it is a brilliant festival.
Yeah, Elfest, you talked at a race course, 15th to the 18th of July, 2016.
Get in. I didn't even ask her to rehearse that. It is a brilliant festival, so listeners, if you are considering going, please do, because it is a very feel-good festival.
It's fabulous,
I
yeah
would say.
It's jolly.
Jolly. It is. It's jolly.
Jolly.
Should we
really
introduce
jolly
that as a tagline to the director, see what she says?
I think I'm seeing her tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
What do you think, Cindy? Elfest.
Elfest.
The
jolly
fest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come be jolly at Elfest.
And I'm sure it's green. We could all just be jolly green lesbians.
Jolly and green. Ho, ho, ho. There you go, with the jolly green lesbians.
But it is a wonderful festival, and you came to see my show there. And one of the things, the link here is Alzheimer's, is afterwards this older gay couple came up to me and she said, oh, thank you so much for that. I've been having a really difficult time with my brother who has Alzheimer's, and your show reminded me of all the good times.
Oh, how and lovely.
It was just like, that just makes everything worthwhile.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Really, really nice.
Absolutely. So it is those moments where people come up and say, I enjoyed this because, or just the fact that, like you said earlier, they've gone away and gone, oh, I feel so much better.
Yeah.
And you don't know when you look out on your audience who's there, why they're there,
what's going on. Yeah.
But you know, or you can be almost sure, that they've come out because they want to have a good laugh.
Yeah.
And if we can provide that service, you know, all the better. The world's a happier place.
So do you think, because I think we are both on the same page a bit here with our intentions with comedy, but also it can be quite a selfish sport, wouldn't you say? Like, we go up there and take all the credit because it's just, well, if it goes wrong, it's all on us.
Yeah.
But if it goes right, it's
all on us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So do you think there's a lot of egos in it?
Yes. Yeah.
And how do you manage that?
I just block people out that have got egos. Because I don't have one myself, obviously. Yeah.
I had to pick Lara up in a horse-drawn carriage from the train station. She demanded Evian on arrival.
Yeah. And these chocolate biscuits you've provided.
She's not touched them. They're obviously not to standard.
No, well, I think they're Sainsbury's own. And I did specify McVitie's.
And actually Asda. That's even worse, isn't it? So you just don't do ego?
No. I mean, you can't get
up on
stage.
Of course, we've both got egos. Let's not
massive
be...
egos.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not brave enough to be a comedian, but I'll still bloody well get up there and do something. Yeah, it's sort of anyone who's got an inkling to get up on stage in front of people. We've all got egos, haven't we?
Absolutely.
And the fact that, you know, it's so immediate. Your success as a comedian is so immediate. People either laugh or they don't.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, if you're making people laugh, there's such a kick out of that. And I think that's got a bit of ego in it as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drug, isn't it? You do certainly get a high off that,
I think. It's certainly a little bit of a control thing as well. It's kind of like,
look, status, definitely.
Look at me, working the room.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I do get this little voice that goes, that was good. Oh, well done. Oh, yeah. They liked that, didn't they? And I suppose that is basically my ego, isn't it? Just going, well done. Yeah, that was good. Oh, say that bit again. That worked really well last night. You know, all of that. But, you know, almost going back to when I used to watch other comedians from the dark corner of the stage manager, then I was always like, and I certainly wouldn't be showing off like them, and I certainly wouldn't be demanding like them, and, you know, and I'd have no ego. But, yeah, we have to.
Yes, I suppose it's just, yeah, you do need one, yeah, but you just don't be another, I suppose.
That's the thing, you do need one, but it's a positive thing to have one.
Yeah.
Not a look who I am, because actually, I'm not. So I can't.
And I would like to ask you, because again, sort of comedy or stand-up is you're on your own. And you were walking on your own for 6 hours a day. How did you not go
mad? I have no
mad?
Friends is what you're trying to ask me, isn't
no!
it?
No!
Are you a weirdo? Yes, it was me. Uh-huh. It was me walking on the path at night. Sorry.
That's okay. I was just, what were you thinking about for 6 hours a day? I mean, obviously, you don't have to tell me what you were thinking about.
But sex, that's a lot mostly. Of thinking.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. Whether, yeah.
Oh, mostly, so you're like, well,
what porn I would watch when I got to my B&B that evening. Whether I could sneak a quick one in the bush.
Oh,
please take that out, Denise.
No, please keep that in, Denise.
What was I thinking about? I was thinking about how lovely not to be in Marks and Spencer's or Primark or Topshop or anywhere near Christmas present buying.
Oh, because it was that
Christmas
time of
present
year,
wrapping.
I thought,
the confusion.
Why do you spend most of your days in M&S, Topshop and Primark?
Well, because I'm
do
a cashier.
Do you like escalators?
That's my other job.
But this is what my brain is. I understand where she's going with this. Right, of course. Yes, you weren't
not
in the
not to be
hubble.
Buying food, alcohol, presents. Not to be doing any of that for that those particular days.
Horribly intense, or can be.
I'd got all my presents. I'd got all my presents wrapped and ready to go. Obviously, I didn't carry them all with me. I was very lucky to have them delivered. But I was thinking a lot about how nice this is, how lovely this is, how peaceful this is, and how it's lovely not to be kind of caught up in that consumer side of Christmas.
Yes.
And also, I was thinking, I spend a lot of time thinking about all the people that we would be helping with the money that we'd raised.
Fantastic.
And I say we there, not I, because it's not my money. I didn't put any, you know.
All those people who
All those people who donated. I just walked,
yeah.
Which was actually lovely.
Yeah.
And was very lucky with the weather. That. Was that your cat? I didn't know you had a cat. It was meowing to get in. I think that might have gone into the red then. I have to point out that was my stomach and not my bottom. You do know that.
Listen, we do have to explain, and I do hope that that was recorded. I really, really do. Is that that was Lara aching's stomach, possibly aching for the chicken.
Do you know what? It was so Pavlovian because I suddenly, can you smell the chicken?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
The chicken is now starting to smell, and my stomach's going.
In a good way, yeah. Oh,
sorry.
Funny.
That was a growl.
I've once had, you know, when you're so hyper-conscious of everything you do and every noise and every bodily fluid when you're a teenager. We had a maths exam and my friend and I were both paranoid. I get really bad stomach grumbles. She does too. What if we get one in this maths test? She sat in front of me and I swear to God, complete silence. A motorbike started. No, it didn't. It was her stomach in front of me and we were just like...
Oh my God, and you were a teenager.
Laugh, yes, yeah. These tears are streaming down our faces. Oh my God. Going, oh, why? Anyway, I digress. She's hungry, so we're going to finish soon, I think.
That was also, but I mean, you're saying, oh God, yeah, you have a terrible. I that's never happened. That's the first time I've ever heard my someone do anything like that. Yeah.
So, Lara, before we do finish, we'll wind up presently. I know you're obviously performing for us here tonight at Laughing Cows, but by the time this goes out, that will have passed. So where can we see you in the near future? This will go out in a couple of days.
Will it?
So, yeah.
Well, you can see me at Ha Ha Muse.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Oh, where I can
We're
see you
together.
As well, yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, where is it?
That is in Soho at Muse Bar on the 11th of February.
That's right. If you live in Ipswich, you can see me on the 12th of February.
Fantastic.
With Boon Tish at the new something theatre. That's awful, isn't it?
Ipswich at the new something
theatre. The new something, it's on the water side. Is it the Dukes? Pretty much nothing then until Elfest in July.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. No, I'm doing a big event actually in May, which I need to speak to you about, which is called Laughquake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm looking for comedians who would like to come and perform outdoors.
Wow.
In their various cities. And I'd quite like to do one in Manchester.
Oh, yes.
And basically it's about, it covers everything that we've just been talking about in many ways. Because it's talking about, it's encouraging people to come out and watch comedy outdoors.
Okay.
So what happens, this is proper science, what happens is all the good positive vibes go up into the atmosphere.
Right.
Make the world a happier place. So I'm in partnership with a friend of mine who's in Croatia.
Right.
So she's got Croatia, Serbia.
I'm glad you've mentioned this.
This is brilliant because there's loads of cities in Europe that are doing it. I'm hoping to get somebody involved in Amsterdam. I'm hoping to get somebody involved...
All on the same day at the same time.
Or it has to be at the same day, same time. So whatever time difference... So if you know people in Australia, for example,
which
that want
I
to
do.
Join in, which you do, they'll possibly have to do it in the middle of the night, won't they, to get it right.
Possibly, yeah, 7-8 hours ahead, yeah.
New York, obviously, they'll be doing it in the afternoon if we're doing it in the evening or, you know, so... And what happens is that all this laughter goes up into the universe... And it stops people killing each other, ultimately.
I love it. So a mushroom cloud of happiness the opposite.
Absolutely.
So what is the title of this for people to look for?
Laughquake.
Laughquake. Yeah. Laughquake, if you're from
Manchester. Laughquake. It's dead jolly. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, so that's in May. That'll be on May the 31st.
Wonderful.
In a city near you.
Like it.
I hope.
So we've got you in Soho on the 11th, Ipswich on the 12th of February. May, look out for Laughquake, and July, we're going to see you at Elfest.
There will be other things in between all of that.
Oh, of course, I'm sure there will.
I'm a very busy comedian, performing all the time.
But these are key things that people will stick in people's minds.
Yeah, we'll just go on Facebook. Everything I do is on Facebook.
Lovely.
Everything I do, yeah. Including walking.
Yeah, yes.
I don't often post my meals on there, I will say that.
I am so, so glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love my mum, but she does like a good photo of a meal. And I don't feel very comfortable with that. I don't understand the food.
People are going to start posting their poos on there soon, aren't they?
Oh my God. Oh, they are.
Do you think going to be a craze? You know how these things take off?
And it's going to be guess what I ate last night underneath.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's going to happen. I'm predicting that. Let's see.
I think we're going to leave on that visual image, listeners.
Fantastic.
I would like to thank Lara Aching. This has been really interesting.
It's been
thank
an absolute
you.
Pleasure.
Really cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.